From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's program, we're going to talk about the growth of human population and the debate about the risks of global overpopulation in the future. Now, way back in 1798, the English economist Thomas Malthus famously warned that people could face dire consequences because they can reproduce at a rate much faster than they can increase their food supply. But since Malthus's time, world population has grown from about 800 million people to nearly 7.5 billion today. Yet worries about overpopulation are back. In part, that's because lots more people are on the way, complicating efforts to deal with problems like climate change and water shortages. The UN forecasts that in the near future, the world will add about 83 million people annually. Now, for reference, that's like adding the entire population of Germany to the Earth every single year. By 2100, the UN projects the world will have about 11.2 billion people, and most of the growth will be in Africa, a continent that right now is the world's poorest. Now, in a few minutes, we'll talk with a panel of experts about whether all these new people are cause for concern. But first, we're going to turn to Africa to learn about how a rapidly growing population is changing the country of Zambia. Joining us from the capital, Lusaka, is Pamela Chirobanda. She's a demographer who also works in Zambia's education ministry as a senior official for open and distance learning. Pamela, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Well, Zambia, as I understand it, had about 3.4 million people at independence in 1964. Now there are almost 17 million people. So what has been driving this rapid population growth in the country?
Mostly the challenge that we have in a country is high fertility rates. From way back in 1980, when the Demographic Health Survey started taking on the survey, we saw that the fertility rate was very high. We're trying to reduce it, but we are still very high because we are about five point something. So that is way too high for a country that is developing.
So you're saying the fertility rate is above five, about 5.5 children per woman. Is that correct?
Yes, please.
And so how has this rapid population growth, how has it affected people's ordinary lives, their lives every day?
When we have high fertility like we have in Zambia, we are putting pressure on the economy. Because now the nation has to look at how they are supposed to cater for the high population growth in terms of education, in terms of employment, in terms of land. All these issues are the things that we are trying to work on in the country. So we have limited resources. We are not matching with the population growth. So as any developing country in Africa, these are the challenges that we have. As demographers, we talk about reaching the demographic dividend, where you are supposed to have so many resources and reduce so mortality and the fertility. As at now, we are working towards that, but we have not reached there because in rural areas, we have limited health centers, which are supposed to assist women, especially in taking contraceptive issues and also reducing on their fertility rates. But we are still having such challenges.
Well, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong here, there are a couple factors in Zambia. One is that life expectancy has been increasing. It's now above 60, an average age of 60 years. Previously, it was something on the order of 45, 46 several decades ago. So people are living longer. And as you mentioned, the fertility rate is still high at something like 5.5 children per woman. Tell us about how this is affecting Zambia's urban population then. As I understand it, something like 70% of the population of Lusaka lives in slums where people don't have regular access to electricity or clean drinking water.
Well, Zambia is urbanized. Most of the people are in urban, but we have got poor urban. And as you have said, most of the people now, we have increased on the life expectancy. So it's because we have now the health system has improved. So which means that the people in terms of HIV and AIDS, which was very high in Zambia, people are now adhering to the same. They are taking medication. So not so many people are dying. And because so many people are not dying, yet our fertility rate is very high. We have so many people now. People are not dying. What is expected is people come in, people go out. So in this particular case, we only have people who are coming in through birth, and people are not dying. The health centers are doing very well, but we don't have resources to match the overpopulation.
And talk to us about, I understand that there is some resistance to using contraceptives and birth control to family planning there. Talk to us about that. Why are some women or some men resistant to family planning?
Well, in Africa, it's a norm that is seen. Okay, the women who are educated, they don't have a problem, although we have got so many different types of contraceptives in Zambia, and there are certain types that women shun. They tend to think they have got, they are not user-friendly to their bodies. But most of some other women who are not educated, especially in the rural areas, they tend to listen to their husbands, and the percentage rate of the women who practice unmet needs is still very high, where they are not taking contraceptives, yet they expect that they are not supposed to be pregnant. So some women don't take contraceptives because their husband have said they should not use those things. Maybe their bodies can have an effect, or to do with religion and also cultural norms.
Well, let me ask you about Zambia's population then, because Zambia is remarkable. I saw one projection from the UN a few years that said Zambia's population would grow 940% over the next century, the fastest rate of growth in the entire world. Is this of concern to the Zambian government and to the populace as a whole?
It is of great concern. That's why now we are working, the government is working on increasing the roads. We are working on infrastructure, increasing, developing more infrastructure, increasing on the empowerment of women. There are programs that are there. Also, we are looking at how we can be able to capacitate the women who are in rural areas. We are bringing in programs because we know without empowering women who are the key to producing, we're still going to have such a challenge. So we have such a challenge. So what are the programs that we're supposed to do? We have got so many programs that have been lined, but as our area mentioned, we are doing those programs, still we have that challenge. So there are programs that we are looking at, unemployment. We are trying to shift education from where everyone has to think that when they're educated, it's formal employment. Now we have shifted to skills training to look at where a person is supposed to take care of themselves to be the employers, not being employed.
Well, you mentioned that Zambia is hoping for a demographic dividend. About half the population is under 15 in Zambia right now, as I understand it. And Zambia has enjoyed pretty good economic growth recently. Per capita income is around $4,000 per year. So do you think that Zambia, much like many other countries in the world, have seen that once your income and education level hits a certain level, the fertility rate almost automatically drops to two or three children per woman?
When you say automatically drops when you are educated, I'm not going to agree. That is debatable because I have seen people who are educated, but they are still having more than three children. I have a neighbor who within 5 years, she's got four children. So that person is educated. She's got postgrad education. So it's not a must that when somebody is educated and we take it for weight, that then it means that fertility is going to drop. But that's what we expect. But we still have to look at even the people who are not educated. How are we going to help them so that they also help in reducing fertility?
Well, Pamela Chirobanda, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. And it was my pleasure to contribute to this discussion.
A reminder,
I'll be around to listen to the...
Well, thank you, Pamela. A reminder to our audience that you're listening to Global Journalist. We're talking today about the world's growing population and the debate about whether our children and grandchildren will face crises caused by overpopulation. We just heard from Pamela Chirobanda in Zambia about some of the challenges faced by that country's growing population. To broaden our discussion, we're going to bring in three other people who follow this issue closely. Joining us from Ashton, Australia, near the city of Adelaide, is Corey Bradshaw. He's a fellow in global ecology at Flinders University, where he studies issues like extinction dynamics and human demography. Joining us from Seattle, Washington, is Alex Barrazo. He's the founding editor of the website Real Clear Science and is a senior fellow at the American Council on Science and Health. And joining us from Cairo, Egypt, is Hassan Zaki. He's a demographer and professor of quantitative research methods in the psychology department at the American University in Cairo. Welcome to all of you. Let me start with you, Corey Bradshaw. We heard about some of the challenges in Zambia of their very rapid population growth there. Talk to us, if you would, about this idea of global overpopulation. How should we define it? And is it something broadly speaking, that we should be concerned about right now?
Well, I'll sort of come back to what I study across many species, not just human beings. It's the fundamental concept of what we call density compensation or density feedback. And from bacteria to elephants and everything in between, the way it operates is that once a population sort of increases towards the carrying capacity or the amount that their environment can hold, there's always a feedback in terms of fertility reduction, in terms of survival rates, in terms of aggressive interactions that will lead to lower survival. So basically life for the average individual gets worse. And in the human case, it's we've managed to push this carrying capacity of our environment forward and increase it continually with growing technological advancement. But we're kind of running out of room now. So really the dire predictions of Malthus and the people who sort of poo-pooed that sort of approach have really looked it over the past that they've seen this increasing carrying capacity. But now we're pushing the planet so hard that it's sort of it's generally agreed now that we're using about 1.5 Earths per year in terms of our total amount of resource use. In other words, we go through our what's sustainably usable in the first 6 to 7 months of each year, meaning that it's starting to come back and bite us. And if you think about the number of people who are malnourished or at least immunocompromised from lower nutrition, you know, we're getting into this sort of billion, perhaps even up to 2 billion range, depending on how you define the concept. And there's all sorts of corollaries of that, including political and even our refugee crisis.
Corey, if you could hold that thought for a moment, because I do want to come back to some of these corollaries that you're talking about to this. But I wanted to turn the discussion to Alex Barrazo. We heard Corey Bradshaw talking about the Earth being at its carrying capacity, or the human population using a greater percentage of the Earth's resources than the Earth can sort of sustainably provide. What's your general take on this?
Well, it's a mistake to compare humans to bacteria or cockroaches or elephants. And the reason is because we have another factor that other animals don't have, which is education and economics and birth control. And what has happened in every major developed country from all of Europe, all 27, 28 nations of the European Union and the United States and Japan and Russia, is that as the population grows, as the economy grows and a country becomes wealthier and more educated, without fail, the fertility rate drops. And in fact, we're now seeing Japan is talking of a demographic crisis. They're going to be losing possibly a third of their population within the next 30 or 40 years. That's happening in Russia as well. They actually have a day of procreation where people can win prizes for conceiving on a certain day of the year. So we have to be very careful to extrapolate the results of bacterial studies to humans. We are not bacteria. At best, overpopulation might be a local problem. You know, it may not be the smartest idea to jam-pack, 10 million people into Los Angeles where there isn't much water. That may not have been smart. But the carrying capacity of the world for the human population can sustain a couple more billion people. Demographers are predicting that probably by sometime around the 2100s, population is going to peak and start to decline naturally.
Well, you raise a good point, Alex, and I want to turn this to Hassan Zaki, because Alex brought up this idea that overpopulation may be a local issue. And Hassan, you are in Egypt. Egypt had about 27 million people in 1960. It has almost 100 million today. Just in what's happened in your lifetime, we've seen a very rapid increase. Can you tell us about how this affects sort of daily life in Egypt?
Okay. Before we talk about daily life, I would like to say some figures to show how big the problem is in Egypt. For example, from 2005 to 2015, the number of population increased in Egypt during these 10 years equal to the size of Belgium and Sweden.
So just Egypt in 10 years, then, the population of Belgium and Sweden was added to Egypt's population.
Yes. Egypt, for example, the size of Egypt population now is almost three times the size of Malaysia, almost 2.5 the size of Canada. Egypt annually gives 2.7 million live births, which is equal to half of the 28 countries in the European Union. So this tells you how a country is contributing to the population problem all over the world.
And of course, in the case of Egypt, this is complicated by the fact that even though Egypt is a fairly good-sized country, most of it is desert, and so basically the habitable land is just within a few miles of the Nile River, which runs sort of the length of Egypt. So
the 95 million population, they are living on 6% of the population of the area.
And so how does this affect people's daily lives then? Like, how can you see and feel the changes in the number of people there?
The cities are becoming more and more crowded. Unemployment is rising. Education is going down. And the government is trying its best to improve these things. And it's encouraging people to decrease their number of families, the number of children. But still, people want to get more children.
Well, Corey Bradshaw, let me move this back to you then. Alex Barrazo was talking about how bacteria and other types of ecological studies may not be relevant when predicting the carrying capacity for humans because people have technology and economics and other different advantages that animals and bacteria and plants don't have. What's your response to that?
Well, that's the technology is, in fact, the thing that's going to probably push us over the edge in the long term anyway. Because, I mean, if you look at our planet now, we've lost since 1970 over half and probably up to 60% of all vertebrate individuals in all populations that have ever been censused. In other words, we're destroying this planet faster than we can possibly rejuvenate it. And that is coming to bite us back in the bum. And really, if you think about the distribution issue, and it was said that it was a local problem. Well, if you take Africa, for example, every 1% increase in population growth increases the number of refugees by 3 to 4 times, such that if you take that to the end of the century, you're looking at between 80 and 120 million African refugees alone produced per year. Now, where are those people going to go? They're going to places like America, they're going to places like Europe, and they're coming to places like Australia. And this has corollaries to politics, it has corollaries to how we elect our politicians, and the kinds of lifestyles that people are trying to protect. So saying it's a distribution, saying it's a local problem, negates the entire concept of redistribution. And if someone is lacking something, they're going to try to take it from someone else.
A reminder that you're tuned into Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking about the debate about overpopulation. As the world's population is set to grow from 7.5 billion today to nearly 10 billion by 2050. We're joined by Corey Bradshaw of Flinders University in Australia, by Alex Barrazo of the American Council on Science and Health, and Hassan Zaki, a demographer and professor at the American University of Cairo in Egypt. If you're interested in more underreported international news and human rights issues, visit us online at globaljournalist.org. You can also like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the videocast of this program on YouTube, or get our podcast from iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. Alex Barrazo, I want to follow up with you on this point about overpopulation being a local problem, because it wouldn't seem too local to someone who is living in Egypt. And I think, as Corey highlights, while some parts of the world, like the North Dakota or South Dakota or Siberia or parts of Australia, may not seem densely populated, it's sort of a thorny political question as to whether or not those places will accept people moving from Africa or from other places that are increasingly densely populated.
Well, what I don't understand is why we assume that demographic trends that have happened literally everywhere else in the world are not going to happen in Africa or Asia. It is simply an empirical, observable, measurable fact that developed countries are not producing enough children. That's true, like I said, in the United States, all of Europe, and in China now, actually. The population of China is going to peak at some point soon, and in Japan already. So I don't understand why it would be true in the Northern Hemisphere, but not in the Southern Hemisphere. I think if people are going to take the belief that population in Africa is just going to keep growing and growing and growing. It's never going to stop. Well, they have to explain why Africa is different from every other continent on the planet. The other thing is that while it's true that there may be a billion malnourished people on the planet, it's a smaller fraction now than it was 40 years ago. About 40 years ago, about a third of the people living in the developing world were undernourished. Today, it's only 13%.
So in other words, what you're saying, in absolute terms, there may be more malnourished people today, but as a share of the total population, it's a smaller share.
Absolutely correct.
Well, Hassan Zaki, let me turn this to you then. We heard Alex saying that we should expect that birth rates will fall as countries develop economically. Tell us about Egypt's birth rate. Has that been the case, that as Egypt has grown richer, the birth rate has correspondingly fallen as it has in parts of Europe, North America, and elsewhere?
Yes. Birth rates in the 70s was almost 30 per 1,000 population. But since late 80s and 90s, it declined to about 20, 22. But since 2010 and late 2000, it started going up again. People are saying, or demographers are saying, maybe because there is some change in the economic environment, or because people are getting more impoverished. So they want to get more children to capture or to add up to their wealth. So it's a debate why birth rate is going up again in Egypt.
So in other words, then for a certain period of time, Egypt followed this trend that we've seen elsewhere, where fertility rates declined, women were having fewer children.
Yes.
But now you've seen
in
recent years it's ticked back up, and the government is struggling to explain why. And how seriously is the government treating this issue? Is it a high priority?
Yes, it is a very high priority. And there was a conference maybe 2 months ago about the population problem in Egypt. The president is giving it all his commitment. Yes, it's getting a priority in Egypt.
Well, Corey Bradshaw, if I could turn this back to you, the question in part seems to be whether or not we can see increased living standards around the world as population grows. And it seems like you see a connection between degradation of the environment and long-term threats both to the human population and our living standards. Then is that a connection that we can make 50 years from now, 100 years from now, or does it become sort of too difficult to forecast that far in advance?
Well, I mean, how long's a piece of string, and how can you predict the next war? There is empirical evidence to show that population growth does actually increase the incidence and duration of wars, especially in places that are developing. And in fact, sort of getting back to some of the other points about, does Africa do anything differently? Well, in fact, it is. It hasn't dropped the fertility rates at the same rate it did in Latin America or in Asia. And in many countries, in fact, it stagnated, these fertility declines. So something different is going on in Africa. But overall, as talking about a billion people who are malnourished, whether or not it's a smaller proportion really doesn't come much of a comfort to the billion people who are suffering from it. So I find that kind of statistic a little bit intellectually weak. But
what are you supposed to do? Like, just, I mean, we have to feed them, right? So, I mean, just tell them there's no hope. Sorry, we're not going to feed you. I mean, that sort of seems a sort of defeatist argument.
No, I mean, there's no question that one should promote all this sort of healthy living standards that one can, but at the same time promoting family planning, and as Pamela mentioned in the first segment, promoting that through women and empowering women is probably the only ethical choice that we really can have in this debate.
I agree with that, but I think that's already happening, right? I mean, like I said, as women become educated, they tend to have fewer children. Now, that may not be true in every single country on Earth, but that's generally the pattern.
But Africa is, in fact, bucking the trend. And even if there is a slowdown, you can take a car that's traveling at high velocity, and although you can slow the acceleration rate, it's still traveling so fast that when it hits the wall, you're still going to have deaths and injury. So whether or not it's accelerating is kind of irrelevant. We still have a massive population size. It's only going to increase for the foreseeable future anyway, at least till the end of the century, as you mentioned.
If I could just jump in here, Alex, because I think part of the question is whether or not some of our values are going to have to change if we're going to have a much bigger population on the planet. And what will those changes look like? Will we still be able to have an Amazon rainforest that covers much of Brazil? Will that have to be cut down to support agriculture? Similarly, other forests in other parts of the world, in Africa, are there going to have to be some sort of significant changes as to how we think of nature and our place in the world and the other species that we live with here if we're going to support 11, 12 billion people?
I doubt it, because technology tends to keep advancing so that we're producing more food on less land. That's been the pattern, and if we get Asia and Africa to adopt modern technology in the form of modern agricultural practices, it shouldn't be a problem. I don't think we're going to have to chop down the Amazon rainforest. In fact, that's not a good idea anyway. The soil there, I don't think, is particularly fertile for agriculture. But in regard to the overpopulation causing environmental damage, there's a concept known as the environmental Kuznets curve, which is the idea that as a population grows and as a country starts to become wealthier, it initially destroys its environment because they start building coal power plants and you know, doing bad things to the environment. But as they become richer and richer and richer, people demand a cleaner environment. And we saw that happen in Europe and in the United States as well. And so I think that as a country becomes richer, environmentalism becomes a luxury, and they want to have it. They want clean air. They want clean water.
Well, it's a nice theory. Unfortunately, there's no evidence for the environmental Kuznets curve ever in the history of humankind, and I can show
except
you the
for
evidence
the, except for the United States, except for the United States and Europe, there's no
United
evidence.
States is well, the United States' environmental record is appalling, as is Europe's, as is Australia's. There is no environmental Kuznets curve. I can show you.
Well, if we can just hold that point for a moment, because our time does grow short, and I want to turn this back to Hassan Zaki, if we could.
It does not exist.
And I'm sorry if I could just jump in here, because we're running out of time, Hassan. What is your feeling about the future of this issue? How do you foresee this evolving over the next 5 to 10 years in Egypt, in the Middle East, in Africa? Is there a reason for optimism?
There is, yes. But the point is that, for example, in Egypt, total fertility rate reached around 3. If we want the population...
3 children per woman.
Yes. If we want the population to stop increasing, the fertility rate, as we all know, should go to the replacement level, which is about 2. Moving from 3 to 2, this is very, very difficult, because families desire 3 children. It is very difficult to convince families to move from 3 to 2. And I think this is the issue. This is the point that all Egyptians now are trying to work on, this point, to try to convince families to move from 3 to 2. Without doing that, the population will continue increasing.
That's going to have to do it for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Pamela Chiruabanda, Corey Bradshaw, Alex Barrazo, and Hassan Zaki for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Our assistant producers this week are Jiwon Choi, Waverly Colville, and Samantha Lucas, with supervising producer Rachel Foster Gimbel. Elisa Blyle is our visual editor. Aaron Hay is our audio engineer. Travis McMillan is director. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.